Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of The Vegas Therapist. I am your host, Ryan Winder. And remember, what's happening in Vegas is not staying in Vegas, as I bring you helpful tips in all sorts of topic areas with a Vegas twist, of course. So let's get the show started. Welcome, welcome everybody. It's good to have you back in for another episode of The Vegas Therapist. I'm your host, Ryan Winder. We've got another great show and guest for you today. Dr. Randall Bell will be joining the show talking about his new book called Post-Traumatic Thriving. So stay tuned for that. Before I get to him, though, I just want to talk about last week's episode with Dr. Anna Lemke and the Dopamine Nation, who is the Dopamine Nation author. That was a great show. I got a lot of good feedback about that interview and just the things that she shared, a lot of insightful things and about our pursuit of pleasure and avoidance of pain. So if you haven't listened to that one, go back and check it out. Lots of great info in there, and I'm just grateful for her to coming on and sharing her knowledge and insight into that dynamic within our society and how we can press on the pain side to try to have more enduring, healthier dopamine in our lives. So again, check that one out. A couple other housekeeping items. Just if you are interested in following me more, I have my Facebook group that you can be a part of. I also am on Instagram. So the Vegas Therapist is my tag on Instagram. So there's a couple different ways. Also, if you just want to reach out to me for any coaching or therapy or whatever you may want, email me at ryanwinder@gmail.com. That's a good way to get a hold of me or touch base. Also, too, and I put this out there before, if you know of any speaking events or would like me to come speak at an event, contact me for that as well. I'm trying to do more of that and get myself out there in that way a little bit more. So if you think I might be a good fit for any speaking event that you may know of, again, hit me up, Gmail, ryanwinder@gmail.com. Heck, you can even text me, 702-743-9550 is my cell phone. To text and contact me that way. So anyway, that's the housekeeping stuff. Again, we have another great guest, Dr. Randall Bell, talking about post-traumatic thriving, the book, and also just the process of how we move through trauma and hopefully get to a place of thriving and using our trauma as fuel to enhance our lives and to move forward. And I think a lot of people, when we experience trauma, we don't feel that sense that that's going to be the case. But the research in this book talks about moving through that process and getting to that place of thriving in our lives. So stay tuned for that. It's a great interview and hope you enjoy it. And we'll see you on the other side. All right. At this time, I would like to welcome in my guest, Dr. Randall Bell, who is the author of a new book called Post-Traumatic Thriving, which is a great book about working through and our trauma, but then really kind of coming out the other side and obviously thriving through that. So welcome, Dr. Bell.
Hey, Ryan. Great to be here. Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks for coming on, making time. So the book just came out January 10th, right? So it's relatively new and excited about it, I'm sure, right?
It's been fun. I just did an interview in London with the BBC, so it's off to a good start. Oh, and good. Now I'm up the ladder talking to you.
Well, there's lots of people that need the, you know, trauma in Vegas and parts of, you know, the country I cover. So it will hopefully be a good thing for them. So tell us a little bit about then, first of all, maybe for people that aren't familiar with your work, maybe just start off by telling us a little bit about yourself, kind of your background, and then kind of how the book came to be.
Yeah, sure. Well, I grew up in a little town called Fullerton, California, and lived a couple streets away from Leo Fender. In fact, he's one of the stories in the book. He invented the electric guitar. And I was kind of born into my trauma. I was born with a congenital heart defect. And I talk about that through the book. And in terms of recovering from my childhood trauma, the deal is that trauma hits about everybody at one point or another. The statistics are that by college age, 68 to 85% of all college age students have had a trauma. Mm. And the problem is it's not taught in school. my career is kind of unique because I study disasters as an economist. And so I've worked on the World Trade Center and Hurricane Katrina and O.J. Simpson and JonBenet Ramsey. I've worked on a lot of these kind of cases, hundreds of cases over the years. And that gave me unique access to the people behind the statistics. So to finish answering that question, I basically thought, hey, I have this unique access to all the people behind the scenes of these big cases. I suffer from a childhood trauma. The schools don't teach anybody how to deal with trauma. Let's do the research and figure out, you know, using all these interesting components, what trauma really looks like so we can kind of heal and move past it.
Yeah, no, it's great. It's great. And like you said, they definitely don't teach us about trauma. There was another book recently came out and it kind of talked about that same concept, just how I think they'd done some programming in schools where it's like they tried to do some more trauma type, you know, therapies or at least like support for around that. And they found some great results. But like I said, for the most part, it's not really taught about in schools, but yet a lot of kids are suffering from it. And I think you mentioned this in the book too, just the idea of big T's and little T's. A lot of times we think about trauma in more of the bigger kind of case. Like you mentioned some big things that you worked with, some bigger events, but there's a lot of little T's out there or little traumas that have just as much of an impact on us, right?
As much or more. I mean, you know, it's even though these have, I use the big examples because everybody kind of knows about them and it's efficient. Mm-hmm. To explain the concepts, but these the exact same concepts of people going through those traumas it's the same process as you or I with traumas that nobody's ever really heard about.
Right. Right. Yeah. So I think that's important to remember. I think sometimes people can minimize their trauma or kind of push it away, but the idea of whether it's a big or a little thing, there's still an impact and there's still these different things that they need to go through for the healing. So kind of then back to the book, which is again, Post-Traumatic Thriving, for people that didn't pick up that the first time. You kind of refer to these three stages that we go to within our trauma. Do you want to just touch on the different stages and then we can kind of maybe talk a little about each of them, but do you want to just, yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of like there's a graph in the book, but basically you're going along, everything's nice. We call it the baseline. And then all of a sudden trauma hits. And the recovery process is basically in three stages: the dive stage, the survive stage, and the thrive stage. So dive is where you get knocked down, survive is where you get back on your feet. But what I've noticed in the research is there's a segment of trauma survivors that not only get back on their feet, they now are doing remarkable things. It kind of as if they were shaken up by the whole situation and awoke to kind of near superhuman capabilities, and they're thriving. And so it's really a focus, not just on how to survive trauma, but to really tap into that fuel and thrive.
Right. Which is, yeah. I mean, I think when people maybe kind of experience trauma, especially early on, you know, they definitely don't see themselves as being able to thrive as a result of it. It's like more of a handicap or something that's like, you know, that they're stuck in, which again, some of that is referenced in the book and kind of maybe whether it's in the depression side of it or whatever it may be. But the idea of thriving, I think that's really what caught my attention even about the book too, is just this idea of thriving as a result or after the fact and giving people that message that can be the case, right?
That is the message, and the fact that everyday people are doing this all the time in terms of tapping into that fuel. And every single person talked about in the book, I mean, some of them are household names, but I interviewed every one of them and they went through the same process. And the deal is that not only the schools don't teach us this stuff, but there's, you know, the stuff we do in society, we're talking about, you know, the problems, incarceration or alcoholism or drug abuse, workaholism, these are all symptoms. The underlying problem is unresolved trauma. If we can really go after the real issue, which is unresolved trauma, these other issues tend to go away. So homelessness, you know, the list goes on and on with society's problems. But the underlying common denominator is unresolved trauma.
Right,
Right. Yeah, for sure. So kind of in then looking at the three stages, the first one, like you mentioned, was the dive stage. So what can people, like, what do people look for in that? Like if they're in that, or that's something that they've just experienced, like what would they kind of come to expect about the dive stage?
Yeah, the dive stage usually starts off with shock. I mean, it's that emotional charged, physiological, emotional response to trauma. And I kind of get in right there. I get into some of the psychology of it, but really the physiology. In other words, explaining what's going on with the brain, the amygdala, the release of cortisone and the release of adrenaline, which is nature's way of protecting us. If the lion's chasing us, this is the response to, you know, be in shock and run. So there's a flight, freeze and hide from the lion, or fight the lion, you know, with a rock or something. So the flight, freeze mode is a normal trauma response. Once we understand that it's, even though it's got comes with a lot of emotion, once we realize it's normal, that in and of itself is healing to recognize that, because we're not really abnormal from having been shocked, having gone through some kind of trauma. And then we kind of work through denial and anger and bargaining, depression. These are kind of the standard five stages of grief, but we discuss each one of these steps working through the dive stage.
Yeah. I liked how that kind of came into play too. Just the idea, like the stages of grief, kind of like they coincide with trauma too, because you kind of go through that similar process, because there is a sense of loss of something, right? You know, or, you know, experiencing that loss in some way, whether it's like some kind of tragic event that takes somebody you care about, or just something that's happened to you, your body is kind of going to go through those things. The other thing that it seemed like, you know, like you mentioned, it got pointed out, just how we can kind of get stuck in one of those fight, flight, or freeze states, which then, you know, tends to be, you know, problematic until we recognize that that's actually what's happening and we kind of move on. So definitely some, you know, great information as far as that goes into understanding. Like, I think one of the things I hadn't really thought about the shock thing, but when I read it, I was talking with a client last week and I just mentioned to her this idea of shock and kind of like what level of that might still she be carrying, or kind of even just being in that state. And it was just an interesting discussion, because for whatever reason, I never really thought about that part of it. But that can be a lasting aspect to the trauma, just kind of staying in that shock phase where you're just like, can't believe it's happened, right?
Well, yeah, exactly. And the thing is if we don't complete the trauma cycle, we can get stuck in the shock phase, as you just said. We can get addicted to anger and get stuck there. We can get stuck in any one of these modes. The idea is to understand what these processes are. Spend an appropriate amount of time. It's okay to be angry. It's okay to go through all these things, but you know, deal with them, and then you know, keep the wheels moving at some level, and move on.
Right. So when you see people kind of move into the survive stage, like what did you notice about that? Like, what were some of the key components of the survive stage?
Survival is kind of getting back on the feet, and that's where you kind of say, okay, I got to confront this issue. I got to deal with it enough. I've had enough anger. I've had enough depression. It's time to really face the situation. And then there's a process of untangling it. And that's just saying, you know, looking at the whole mess and sorting it out, discarding what's wrong, keeping what's right, and so forth. And the really fun part of the survival stage is experimentation, saying, hey, you know what? I've always been wanting to try this hobby or do this or do that. Or maybe it's time to take on some new project I've been thinking about. Experimenting, in other words, with various potential solutions to start kind of zeroing in and targeting what's really going to work. That's kind of fun. And just a general mindfulness and awareness of the situation. This is all kind of characteristic of the survival stage.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think the one thing, you know, the one word that kind of stood out to me in that part too, I mean, there's a lot of obviously information, but just even just the notion of like, this is where we kind of begin to stabilize and kind of create a safer environment for ourselves. Right. Cause like, you know, we can spend so much time in that place, like in the dive space, where we don't feel safe or we feel uncertain, or we're stuck in that fight, flight, or freeze part. But like the idea of kind of moving into more of a safer place as we kind of, you know, confront and kind of sort these things out, experiment, like you mentioned. But I think that's what, when you see people really start to kind of take back their life, it's like they start to feel safe in it. They start to feel more, okay, I can do this, which is, you know, I think a great feeling for, you know, people that have experienced the, you know, high levels of trauma. So just out of curiosity, like you mentioned, like for you, like the congenital heart defect, right? That you were born with. What allowed, like, where did you kind of start to feel safe? Like once, like things just, surgeries, like when did that happen for you?
Well, for me, I had open heart surgery when I was 11, and I'll never forget when it was quite an ordeal. So from my time of birth to age 11, I had these chronic visits to the doctor frequently. When I would go running with my friends around the neighborhood, I was the first one to tire out because I wasn't getting proper circulation. And that's, you know, that's all traumatic. The other traumatic aspect is my parents did the classic thing. And I love my parents, but they didn't talk about it. And so there was always kind of a sense of mystery. And I still remember the shock of learning about that I was going to have surgery kind of accidentally. But then getting to the surgery itself, you know, after the everything healed up and the stitches are out, the doctor patted me on the back and he says, okay, you're all fixed. Go have a great life. And so physically, I have been totally, I was fortunate, you know, I was totally good to go. But nobody had ever dealt with the emotional side of what I've been through or talked about it even. And so, you know, well into adulthood, I always stuffed any discussions on it. If it came up, I was the first to change the subject. And later it turned out that I had a PTSD issue over the thing. Mm-hmm. And so I had the manuscript written on the book, and this is kind of funny. And then when I realized I had PTSD, I thought, wait a minute, maybe I wrote this book for myself. And I had to rewrite the whole manuscript and change the tone from, you know, you need to do this and you need to do that to saying, hey, we're all in this together, you know, and we need to do this, myself included. And that's, I think, it took a couple of years to re-engineer the book, but it was worth it.
Yeah. Oh yeah, for sure. Well, and then like I said, just shifting from the you to we, it's like, yeah. Oh yeah, I probably, that's the idea of like the awakening or the awareness, like, oh, wait a second, exactly. I've got some of this going on. So yeah. Yeah. It's interesting when we say this too. I have a nephew that had a similar issue, and he's had, you know, had open heart surgery when he was 1.5, and he's had some other things since then. So it's like, hopefully he's listening and recognizes he's probably got some trauma he's got to sort through. So, but Yeah. Cause it definitely can come through that. So, all right. So now, you know, we dive, we move into survive, and we start to stabilize, become safe, confront these things. And like I said, experiment. So then we move into the thriving part. So tell us a little bit about the thriving stage.
Well, thriving is where you say, hey, you know what? I through this experience, even though it wasn't pleasant, it really kind of woke me up and shook me up a little bit. And this is where we get into another area of literature. The first five stages are really the classic five stages of grief. Then I bridge it with the survive. But the last five come from a literature called post-traumatic growth from a couple experts on the East Coast. And so it follows a lot of what they have, their research shows. But it's basically, first of all, The clinical studies show those who have faith in a cause or a power greater than themselves, a spiritual awareness, tend to do better statistically than those who don't have those aspects one way or another sorted out. Connection with others, trauma recovery and particularly thriving is never a solo exercise. So we really have to take a good look at connecting with the right people and relating to others. Part of the process is forgiveness and dispelling some of the myths. I think the number one myth is forgive and forget. I mean, I'm never going to forget my you know, childhood trauma. That's ridiculous, but there are healthy ways of dealing with it. And then resilience, where we kind of reframe things and set goals. And ultimately where we want to land is on having a sense of gratitude. Like for my situation, I'm never going to be grateful that I had heart surgery. That was a really miserable experience. But I'm grateful today as an adult, because when I see a kid in a wheelchair, it doesn't take a lot of imagination, because that was me. I have a very easy time empathizing with particularly kids that are going through some kind of challenge, particularly physical challenge like I did. So I'm grateful for that, because I think I'm a better person tapping into that empathy rather than not having that gift and having that gratitude for the situation. That's where we want to land with trauma. Is it's not, we don't want to forget it. There's no magic pill or way to mystically get rid of it, but to deal with it in healthy ways and look for the lessons that we get out of it that make us better.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I think one of the things, there was a line in the book in relation to the thrive stage, and it said that during this phase, we become awakened to our inner strength and use trauma's energy to do something new and fulfilling. And I thought that was great, because like, that's kind of like bringing that forward, like you said, and being able to kind of like use that in a state of gratitude to where it's like, but it's drawing on it to do something new, to do something different, to push yourself beyond maybe limits that you thought you had per se. But like when you think about like that inner strength and using trauma's energy, what does that mean to you as far as that, like that using trauma's energy? Cause maybe that is, I don't know, maybe that's hard for people to grasp, but how would you describe that?
Well, sure. I mean, as I mentioned at the start, Ryan, I grew up in Fullerton, and I'll just use a couple examples I have in the book. Cause I like telling the stories of people, and I'll like Leo Fender lived a couple streets away that invented the electric guitar I mentioned. Well, he had a lot of people don't realize it, but he had a glass eye from an accident when he was a kid, and he fell on a picket fence. And then he was also deaf because he had his head in a amplifier case, and somebody turned the switch on and blew out his eardrums. And so he had a lot of, trauma from being half blind and deaf. And yet he fueled that energy into his inventions. And I'm in the friend of the office of a friend right now, but we're putting together a Leo Fender exhibit to honor him. And today Fender is $1 billion a year business enterprise. More important than that, I mean, he changed the whole landscape of music. He touched every musician's lives with his inventions. So that's a perfect example. And that literally happened in my backyard. Another example is Jerry Jewell. I went to high school with Jerry. She was, some people recognize her, a lot of people recognize her name, because she was on Facts of Life, the TV show. She's the first disabled person to ever land a network television show. She was born with cerebral palsy. And now she just did the Deadwood movie. And so she tapped into her trauma. She and I have had a lot of long conversations, which again, I put into the book, of what that process looked like, because she could have given up. Her parents could have given her an easy chair and a TV to watch, but she decided to get into the game of life in spite of her trauma. And she's spoken at the White House 3 times. So she inspires a lot of people. That's what post-traumatic thriving looks like.
Yeah. I think the other statement that came out towards the end, it was like setting goals for growth and development, and then gratitude for lessons learned, which is a big part of kind of what you just said. It's like, I'm not going to let this define me or kind of keep me at this certain place, whether it's like pull up a chair, whatever, and just kind of like be in this place. I'm actually going to kind of push myself to set these goals for growth and development. And then, like I said, kind of having more of a sense of gratitude for whatever it is that happened, and seeing the value of it and how it can bring me to a better place, rather than, again, kind of being stuck in the victim mode of things. And I think we've all seen that, I mean, people that kind of like go more that way, where it's like they're the victim of whatever it is that happened to them, versus, this idea of thriving through our trauma. Hopefully people will read this and understand that that's a very you know, that's a possibility for them. They don't have to stay stuck in that victim or dive or whatever stage that they might be in. It's just like they can use this as a way to move forward in life. So I definitely think there's a lot of value, and hopefully in this day and age, as we kind of been talking more about mental health, you know, people are open to this notion that there is, you know, possible way through their trauma and stuff. So a lot of great things. I just more thinking about the like, was there other things that you saw? Like, you kind of go through the stories of a bunch of different people and kind of like their process through these different stages. Was there one of those other, another one of those stories that kind of stuck out to you as far as somebody that really was able to thrive through their trauma?
Yeah, but there's several, but one is a guy, a friend of mine, JC. He was incarcerated for murder in San Quentin prison. Well, you talk about a trauma. He caused a lot, you know, trauma through the his actions, mm-hmm. and then traumatized his family. And of course, he was convicted as he committed the crime when he was a teenager. He's 17, so he goes to prison with a life sentence at the age of 17. That's traumatic. Realizing he's wrecked other people's lives, his family's lives, his own life, and facing life in prison in San Quentin. Talk about trauma. JC was paroled after 22 years, and I just had breakfast with him, and he's in a PhD program. I was at his undergrad graduation. He earned a couple associate degrees in prison through the programs offered there. He realized that as a youth, he had made some very bad choices, and he decided that he was going to fuel his energy into doing something very positive. He volunteers with kids. He's married, his wife, a beautiful wife, a beautiful son, a great father. And he spends a lot of time volunteering in the community, making sure that the kids in our community aren't making the same mistakes he made. And like I say, he's going into the second year of his PhD program. That's thriving. You know, no matter how bad it is, and it can get really bad, you can always make a U-turn. You can always turn it around.
Yeah, I love that at the end of the book where you talk about, like, what was it, 20 or something lessons learned from Santa Claus, you know, I mean, where you kind of put that into, you know, out there. And it's like, there's a lot of great things to kind of take away from even, and that's the thing too, we can watch other people, what they do and see, and not just look at it and say, well, that's them. It's like, no, that they're doing the thing that we can do too. We just have to, whether it's use that energy or, you know, go through the other stages to get to that place where we can use the energy, but they're doing it because they want to have something different. And, you know, that's available to us all. So it's good to see other people, especially in those kinds of circumstances, you know, turn things around and utilize that energy that they've experienced, that the trauma energy, and put it towards something valuable. So, yeah. Anything else that you'd like to share with the audience today, or any other topics around the book or things that you kind of learned as a result of writing the book?
Sure. I mean, I guess my kind of concluding kind of thoughts are that this stuff really works. It's not necessarily difficult. It's actually very simple. These concepts are anybody can do them. Most, if not all of them, don't cost a dime. It's not a, you know, expense issue. It's just simply the awareness and the humility to just say and accept the findings of all the science and out there that's demonstrated through the lives of the people that we follow through these stages that are outlined in the book, and saying, I can do it. My parting thought is, in chapter one, I lay out two really potent concepts, two of several, but one is sitting in the fire, having conversations like we're having about these ugly topics. I mean, who wants to talk about trauma? Who wants to talk about incarceration or handicaps, or, you know, all these kinds of things, heart surgery? But having these conversations, sitting in the fire, is very powerful, because, again, if you bottle it up inside, you start an internal war, and there's never a good end to that story. So talk about it, sit in the fire. And the other one is grounding exercises. You know, the first time I ever meditated in my life, I was in San Quentin prison as a volunteer sitting between two convicted murderers, holding hands and meditating. And I was freaking out because it was so crazy on so many levels. So the thing is to take a lot of deep breaths throughout the day, meditate, whatever that looks like to people. And that's a very healing exercise.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, because even when you said like a lot of these things don't necessarily cost for people, I mean, in the book, it talks about like the one that, you know, sitting in the fire, the meditating, and also like affirmations, exercise, all those things are just things that we can do for ourselves, and they don't cost anything. Now, the one part that you do mention too is obviously going and talking to somebody, whether that's it could be a friend, it could be some, you know, but sometimes it does require, you know, talking to somebody like myself, like the therapist, and that's okay too. But there's a lot of things that you can do for yourself outside of that, that have a lot of value. So I appreciate you bringing those up, because those are great exercises. And there's sometimes things that we suggest as therapists for you to do anyway, right? Like go and, you know, and have these difficult conversations, maybe with your spouse, or talk to them about some of the things that you've been holding back, or, you know, learn some grounding techniques or meditation or different things like that. So a lot of good things. I really appreciate the work that you're doing and bringing this forward. And again, the book is Post-Traumatic Thriving, and it is available now everywhere, I'm assuming, right? Or
it's everywhere. And with the sit in the fire, you know, I say right at the start of the book, get a good therapist. You know, you folks are on the front lines with this stuff, and it's essential, because you know this, right? I mean, there's a lot of great techniques. There's a lot of happy endings to a lot of horrible stories. So thanks for the work you're doing.
Well, I appreciate that. And also too, you do have a podcast that you're doing as well, right? About
I do a podcast. One of the cases I did was O.J. Simpson, and I do a podcast today with Tanya Brown, the sister of Nicole Brown Simpson. And the title is the same as the book, Post-Traumatic Thriving. And, you know, we've had some interesting guests that have been through some real mind-bending experiences. And it helps people kind of process their own trauma when they realize, hey, other people are going through some stuff too.
Yeah. One of the biggest things about, you know, dealing with trauma is just not feeling alone. And sometimes, you know, when you hear, like you said, other people's stories, it's a good way to not feel alone. And it kind of can give you then, okay, if they can do it, I can do it too. So I think that's the big thing about connection and kind of coming together. I know that's one of the last principles, is just this idea of connection, but we can feel connected more so by, we have to talk about it. And the more we talk about it, the more there opportunities there are to hear those kinds of stories from other people, and then give you the fuel or the hope that you can do it yourself. So I appreciate that work and getting that out there, and definitely appreciate you coming on today and talking about the book, and look forward to possibly talking in the future.
Yeah. Anytime. I thank you, and best of luck to everyone. By the way, the book is on, Amazon. The Kindle version is 99 cents. I already have a business, so this is not really a big financial venture for me. I just was in a unique position to collect this information. It did myself a lot of good collecting it, and hopefully it helps a few folks along the way as well.
Yeah, I think so. It's definitely great. It's got a lot of good tools in it, so and information about just moving through the process. So thank you again, and it was good talking to you.
Same here. Thanks, Ryan.
Yep.
All right. I just want to thank again Dr. Bell for coming on and sharing more about his book and his connection to trauma, his story, and how trauma has affected him, as well as just, again, the things about the book, the dive, the survive, and the thrive stage. And hopefully you were able to identify if you're in any of those stages or where you're at or how you can do better. And obviously you can check out the book for more information on how you can progress better through your own trauma. Couple things I just thinking about is, you know, as I've been preparing for this episode and reading the book, I really appreciate the idea of us kind of focusing on the notion of thriving after trauma. I don't think we spend enough time on that. We definitely talk about how trauma impacts us, getting help for a trauma, but that on the other side, how people's stories have shifted and been able to, how they've been able to thrive. So I do kind of try to want to make that a focus at some point, maybe bringing people on to talk about their stories of thriving after trauma, and just do some of that, because it's something definitely to celebrate. And I think we've all experienced trauma in some way. So how we've done that. So my challenge or thought to you is, if you feel like you have something you want to share, reach out to me. tell me kind of what your story is, and maybe we can make an episode as far as like talking about that. Cause I do think that that's an important aspect of not only just mental health and healing, but the idea of celebrating our recovery in a way that kind of brings it full circle to where, again, we've used that fuel and overcome and be able to now be on the other side and share that success with others. Maybe as a roadmap for them, you know, working through their trauma. So lots of great things in the book, lots of great things to sit on and think about for yourself and kind of where you're at. But most important thing is that we need to take care of ourselves. If we have some kind of trauma, you know, moving through the process, getting help, being able to talk to somebody, do things for self-care, and really just get into that space where we can take care of what we need to take care of. So this is Ryan Weiner, the Vegas Therapist, signing off. Till next time.